With The Rock coming back on SmackDown this Friday, the question was, would Cody Rhodes have one final message for The Rock before we get to the end of the week? We did have Cody Rhodes in the main event on Raw tonight against Grayson Waller, who is not a Raw star. We did have that match, and we did have one member of the Bloodline in attendance on the show, and that was Paul Heyman. The only non-Samoan in the Bloodline was on Raw tonight in a very rare Paul Heyman segment, because not a great segment. He felt a little off. He was off his game. And honestly, he didn't really have a whole lot to say in that segment. But what we did get was a very fiery, very pissed off Cody Rhodes. That's something I'd like to see more of here on this show. I need more angry Cody Rhodes on Monday Night Raw. I need him to get pissed off. In fact, something that I felt as the show went on, right up until the very end, there was a different feel to it in that there were a lot of angry people on this show. And I like that. I like it when everybody is pissed off at each other. That's when Raw is at its best. That's one of the things I loved about the show 25 years ago. Everybody was just pissed off at everybody. Cody Rhodes was pissed tonight. Drew McIntyre's going around pissing everybody off. Liv Morgan is pissed at Becky Lynch. I mean, there's a lot of that going around right now. The Rock will be on SmackDown on Friday. We will find out then, maybe, what his response is, whether or not he accepts the challenge that Cody laid down to him at Elimination Chamber to a one-on-one match, a one-on-one match that I don't think is going to happen. I still feel like it's going to be a tag team match, but we also had on this show something else that I very much enjoyed, and that is Gunther and the Intercontinental Championship were positioned on this show as something highly sought after as we barrel towards WrestleMania. There are multiple people now who have set up their intentions. They have set up a potential path for themselves to challenge Gunther for the Intercontinental title of WrestleMania. And one thing that he has done, as far as, you know, the way he's been booked, is, again, he has restored a lot of prestige to a championship that didn't have a lot of prestige for a very long time. And he's had that title now for over 600 days, and he should be in a big match at WrestleMania this year. The question has been, who are they going to go with now that Brock Lesnar is persona non grata, right? They're trying to find ways to minimize him in 2K24. They're really trying to phase him out as much as possible. So we know that Brock Lesnar is not going to be wrestling Gunther at WrestleMania. Sami Zayn seemed like he was going to be the chosen one, just based on some of the promos he's cut recently and talking about wanting to be a champion again. It seemed to me like that was the direction that we were headed in. And it still feels to me like Sami Zayn may end up being the one who gets the shot. But what they did tonight was very interesting, because they set up a potential situation where we may end up with multiple people vying for the right to challenge Gunther for that title of WrestleMania. And yeah, I posted something earlier during the show on Twitter, and then there was somebody else who responded to me, and I actually like that idea a lot better. I like it when we have this back and forth. There is actually an idea here that I love, that I think would be great to set up a challenger for Gunther at WrestleMania, and we're going to talk about that here during the stream, and then I'm going to let you guys react and let me know what you think. But I think there's actually a great idea that can make use of both nights. You got two nights. Make use of both nights of WrestleMania and end up giving us what I think will be a potential show stealer for match of the weekend at WrestleMania. Now, Seth Rollins has the World Heavyweight title. He was on this show, and he was in the ring making a pitch to Drew McIntyre, who continues to kill it on this show. Never one to miss an opportunity to burn CM Punk. He is going to burn this man every single week until Punk is ready to come back, and I think it's great. I mean, it is great because it keeps that feud in the forefront of people's minds. And again, I never thought Drew was going to leave and go anywhere anyway. He'll be around when Punk is ready to come back. But Seth Rollins is going around. Now, we saw Seth Rollins weeks ago on this television show begging Cody Rhodes to pick me for WrestleMania. He wanted him to pick Seth in the World Heavyweight title after Cody won the Royal Rumble. He was desperate to get Cody to pick him. Now, he's moved on from begging Cody Rhodes, because Cody Rhodes has made his choice. He wants Roman Reigns. Well, now Seth Rollins is practically begging Drew McIntyre, trying to convince him that they need to put on a united front against the Bloodline. And what's interesting to me about this is, if you just go back a few months, at the beginning of this whole thing with Rollins and McIntyre, it goes back to the end of last year. I can remember a time not all that long ago where Rollins was on television basically telling Drew, move on, get over it. They cost you the title at Clash at the Castle that was 2 years ago. It's time to move on with your life. Move on from the Bloodline. And now here we are only a few months later, and the script has been flipped. And now it's Drew McIntyre going out on television and trying to convince Seth Rollins, let it go. You have no business with the Bloodline. We don't need them involved in our story. We don't need them involved with the World Heavyweight title. All Seth wants to do is pick a fight with the Bloodline, and now it's Drew telling him, move on. It's amazing how things can change in a short period of time. I mentioned Becky Lynch and Nia Jax and Liv Morgan. I mentioned people being pissed off at each other. That's a whole situation as well, because Liv Morgan is no fan of Becky Lynch after what she did on the show tonight, and rightfully so. And we had what seemed to be the blow-off, I hope, at this point, for the months-long feud, not 2 years, like Michael Cole said on commentary, unless I missed something here. But a very long program, very long feud that has been brewing for months now between the New Day and Imperium culminated in a street fight tonight that I actually very much enjoyed. And I enjoyed a lot of things on the show tonight. It's a very story-driven show. But that street fight stands out to me. That was a very good match. We'll talk about this entire Raw show because this is your Monday Night Raw review. The final one here for the month of February, our biggest February ever. So give yourselves a round of applause for that. I thank you for the support. It is Monday, February 26, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. Like and subscribe. 450 likes is what we are looking for tonight. That is the goal, at least, at a minimum, for our Be the Booker segment that we try to do here at the end of these streams. Super chats are open as well. We already had a bunch of them coming on in, and I will be going through them and reading them and answering your questions a little bit later on. You'll see them popping up here. Right below my face. So get those on in. Raw tonight kicked off with Dominic Mysterio in the ring already to introduce the women's world champion, hot off her win in the main event at Elimination Chamber this weekend over Nia Jax. It was Rhea Ripley who came out to a babyface reaction. And I have a feeling that that is going to be happening a lot more often between now and WrestleMania when Rhea Ripley comes out. And not only that, but after what Becky did to poor Liv in her match tonight, that coupled with the fact that people really love Rhea could be a recipe to get some people to be turning against Becky Lynch if they're not careful. Although they may not be able to do anything about it. It may not be their choice. So Ripley got in the ring and she boasted about her win at Elimination Chamber in her home country. She said that Nia Jax may have been the biggest threat to her title. She said it doesn't matter, though, because she's from down under, she said. It doesn't take away from the fact that mommy is always on top. Becky Lynch came out. She said that she and Ripley both had a great night on Saturday. She won the Women's Elimination Chamber match, and Rhea beat Nia to retain her title in front of her friends and family in a packed stadium. And Becky said, now Rhea's family won't have to fly into WrestleMania to watch her lose. And when she said that, she got booed. The people did not like that. The people did not like Becky talking about Rhea losing at WrestleMania. Uh-oh. So Becky said that Rhea is the face or has been the face of the company while she has been the heart and soul of it. She said the man can do it all, including beating Rhea, and then she tossed the mic down. Rhea told her, she goes, are you done? She congratulated Becky on winning the chamber and said it's about time she stopped disappointing her. And after some more catchphrases, see, this was my issue with this segment. I like Becky Lynch, like Rhea Ripley, looking forward to the match at WrestleMania. I think it's going to be great. All right, we had a great match last year with Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair. I think these two can go out there and also have a great match. These two went out there in this segment tonight. And sounded like, for the most part, sounded like a couple of robots. constantly repeating their... I mean, how many times did Rhea Ripley go out there and talk about mommy and mommy being on top? 3, 4, 5, 6 times? Becky Lynch out there talking about the man, spitting out this catchphrase, spitting out that catchphrase. I mean, it's like a pull string, right? I could almost predict what they were going to say before they actually said it. So they're out there sounding, instead of actually cutting a promo on each other, it just felt like they were out there regurgitating a bunch of catchphrases. That's not what I want out of these two. I know they have it in them to go out there and actually have a real promo battle. Now, you don't have to do it tonight, right? You still got another 5 weeks or so until WrestleMania. I hope we get some proper promos between these two. You know, and they could draw on their history together, and they could draw on whatever they want to. But for God's sakes, I mean, it's like catchphrase mania over here. I want them to sound like actual human beings and not machines. So after Rhea and Dom got out of the ring, Nia Jax ran in from the opposite side, ambushed Becky from behind. She dropped a leg on her, dragged her over to the corner, and she set her up for the Annihilator. Adam Pearce, though, came out. He led a whole gaggle of officials out there to stop Nia from doing the deed, so she did not squash Becky. It was smart to send Dom out there because I think they know that she has a big fan base that want to cheer for her. But she's really the heel. I mean, look, she's part of a heel faction. The Judgment Day is a heel group in this company. Becky is the babyface. Rhea is the heel. The fans are going to dictate who they like and who they don't like, or who they like and who they like more. And there's nothing you can do about it. So it's going to be very interesting to monitor the reactions, not only in San Jose here tonight, but just every week going forward, and then again at WrestleMania, where I think it's going to be, at the very least, it's going to be very mixed. But sending Dom out there is guaranteed heat. So that was smart, even though I don't know that it worked. But he always gets heat. But I think they did that by design to try to, you know, get the both of them booed. But again, the thing about Rhea is she's cool. And she's dominant. And that's a recipe to turn somebody babyface, right? That's a recipe to get people to cheer for you. It was inevitable. But the verbiage here was not great. It just, again, it doesn't sound organic. You know, it's like, come on, what are we doing here? I know these two can go out there and they can knock it out of the park on the microphone. Tonight was not one of those nights, though. Tonight was very paint-by-numbers shit. Nia attacking Becky doesn't surprise me because Nia beat her at the beginning of the year. She has a clean win. Those were her words, too, on the show, by the way. She said, I have a clean win. I beat her clean. That was back at day one, the very beginning of the year. So even though Nia lost at the Chamber, you know that you had to know that the issue with her and Becky was going to pop up again at some point on TV between now and Mania. And so now Nia is an obstacle. She's another obstacle for Becky on the road to WrestleMania. I would not at all be surprised if there was another obstacle in the form of Liv Morgan in the coming weeks. And they have a match on Raw after the events that took place later on in the show, which I'll get to. And I guess after that, the question is, what do you do? I mean, not that I, you know, not that I care, but... And Nia's been fine. I put Nia over on Saturday. I thought that was the best match I've ever seen her have with Rhea Ripley on Saturday. Even the match tonight that she had later in the show at Liv wasn't very long, but it was fine. I can't say I really care what, if anything, they have her doing at WrestleMania. But she's been in the mix a lot lately. And, you know, we've been talking about some of these people that have been called up. Tiffany Stratton was called up. She's on SmackDown. Bron Breakker was called up. He's on SmackDown. I'm expecting Jade Cargill to be called up soon and to be on Raw. Can't put everybody on SmackDown. If Jade ends up on Raw and they call her up officially before WrestleMania, Jade and Nia, that's a match that's been talked about as a possibility. I could see that. I could see that. You build to the big spot, you know, where Jade picks up for the big slam, you know, the big Hogan slamming Andre moment. Last year it was Brock and Omos, right? The big match there at the beginning of night two, I think it was. We saw Jade lift up Nia on her shoulders at the Royal Rumble. They had a brief interaction there. I could see that being a match and an easy win for Jade Cargill at WrestleMania, if that's the direction they want to go in. Other than that, I don't know what she would be doing on the show. Jackie Redmond interviewed Nia in the back after this opening segment. Nia said there was no way that Becky would be going to WrestleMania after I beat her clean. She said that I went over in our match. Becky did the job. She said Liv Morgan would get 10 times worse what Becky got tonight. Next up, we had Sami Zayn one-on-one with Shinsuke Nakamura. Man, I remember being in the third row in Dallas for that match at TakeOver. Shinsuke's very first match in WWE. What a match that was. This was also good. This was certainly not as good as that match. So what happened here is we had Sami Zayn made his entrance for the next match. Then they went to commercial. Then they came back with that Nia Jax segment that I just mentioned. After the Nia Jax segment, then Nakamura made his entrance. Then the match began. And then 60 seconds later, they went back to commercial. I can understand why people don't watch this show live and they fast forward. I totally understand it. Sammy hit a moonsault off the barricade before the break. But when he got up, he was acting like he hurt his ribs. That would play into the remainder of the match. When they came back, Sammy hit a Michinoku driver for a two count. There was another break in here. Honestly, it felt like half this match happened during the commercial break. Because half of it did happen during the commercial break. Zayn hit a blue thunderbomb for a near fall. Nakamura blocked a Huluva kick with a knee strike and hit the Kinshasa from the middle rope. And he got a very close two count out of it. Nakamura hit another knee strike to the back of Sammy's head while Sammy was draped over the barricade outside the ring. That was like the kill shot. And Sammy was down and Michael Cole on commentary was selling it like that's it. You know, he's not getting back in the ring. He did get back in the ring. He barely beat the 10 count. But as soon as he got back into the ring, Nakamura nailed him with a running knee, and he covered him. And Sammy got his foot on the bottom rope at the very last second. He got a big reaction because he was still alive. Zayn sidestepped another strike in the corner, and then they got a great camera shot. One thing I love about this show since Kevin Dunn left, you know, he went back home to his, wherever, his mansion or his log cabin, wherever he lives. He left, and they brought this other guy, Lee Fitting, in to be the new head of production for WWE, the guy who is no longer eligible to win an Emmy Award because of the whole Emmy scandal. I covered that story. That was very interesting to me that they bring this guy in, and he's ineligible to win an Emmy Award. But one thing he does know how to do is produce television, because some of these camera angles and some of these little production changes they've had on this show have been very noticeable. And I think they've been a breath of fresh air. They've been a welcome change. One thing they did here that I really liked, they had the camera set up in the corner. So when Sammy came barreling in for the Huluva kick, they got this great shot of him kicking Nakamura in the side of the face. And then they kept with that shot as Nakamura fell, and Sammy covered him and he got the pin. So I like that. But this was a much needed win for Sami Zayn here. The story they're telling with him, if he's looking for a path to a title match at WrestleMania, he has to start winning. Nakamura loses to everyone. That's just the role that he has on the show. And again, he seems to be content with it. Sammy needed this win. He got the win. This was good. And it was even very good down the stretch in those final minutes. But again, I can only judge it by what I saw. It's tough to say that the match was anything more than good when I didn't see half the fucking match. But what I saw, I liked. I thought it was a strong match. Now, a couple of segments later, Sammy was in the back with Jackie Redmond and said that it was an understatement that he needed this win tonight. He said he doesn't know what a loss would have done to him. He said his win reaffirmed his belief that he is a contender. He's a contender. And that he will be a champion. He said that if a path to WrestleMania does not find him, he will go out and find it. And at that moment, Ludwig Kaiser walks up to him, Giovanni Vinci, they walk past him. They kind of smirked at him, and they walked right by him. And then Gunther, the Intercontinental Champion, walks up to Sammy, title over his shoulder. He looks at him, and he just starts laughing in his face. And Gunther walks past him. Now, I was going to say something at that point in the show. I'm thinking, okay, here we go, right? We were kind of talking about this in the review last week about it looks like they're moving in the direction of Sami and Gunther for WrestleMania. That seems to be the path for an intercontinental title match. In his promos, Sami stopped talking about the world title. There's two things he did last week. He said he's pushing the pause button on his feud with Drew McIntyre. And he's going after a title. He wants to be a champion. A noticeable change from him talking about being a world champion. That right there told me all I needed to know. But then what they did here a little bit later is they kind of muddied the water a little bit. So let's hold off and we'll talk more about this. We'll come back to this in a second. After a break, Chelsea Green was in the ring, and she said that she issued a formal complaint with management. She was competing tonight in protest. She said that she would have won the Last Chance Battle Royal on Raw last Monday and gone on to win the Elimination Chamber and then gone on to WrestleMania. Had Adam Pearce not added Raquel Rodriguez, who eliminated her to win the Battle Royal last week. Chelsea said that she's the star and people wanted to see her. And she mocked Raquel, flying all the way to Australia and losing in the Elimination Chamber. And then she got a jab into the San Jose Sharks, which everybody booed. And she said that she would prove that Raquel is a big loser. So we had Raquel Rodriguez against Chelsea Green. Chelsea drew an imaginary line, and Raquel crossed the line. Chelsea then drew another line, and again, Raquel stepped past it, and so Chelsea slapped her. And that was the beginning of the end for Chelsea Green. Raquel hit a couple of fallaway slams and then the Tejana bomb, and then she pinned her in a little over a minute. And that's all she wrote. We move on. We move on to Cody Rhodes. Is it Cody Rhodes or Rhodey Codes? I don't know. We'll call him Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes was in the back with Kathy Kelly. He talked about challenging The Rock at Elimination Chamber to face him one-on-one anytime, anywhere. He also talked about facing Grayson Waller later tonight. Talked about being the one to bring Jey Uso to Raw for the first time, and he did that as a guest on Grayson Waller's talk show. That was back at Payback last year. And then, of course, on the most recent Grayson Waller Effect, he issued a challenge to The Rock. He said he's giving Grayson his first Raw main event tonight, and I guess he'll get to find out what that's like in the main event. Gunther and Imperium were out to the ring next for a promo. He talked about retaining the Intercontinental title against Jey Uso on the show last week. He said he actually felt his title slipping away from him for the first time, and he admitted that he got lucky. When was the last time that we had a heel or a heel champion on this show? Admitting that, you know what, I got lucky in my match last week. That's what I like about this guy. He's not like your typical chicken shit WWE heel. He doesn't need other people to win his matches for him. He doesn't need brass knucks. He doesn't need low blows. He doesn't need a chair. He doesn't need a taser. Right? The mat is sacred. He wants to win with honor. He has no problem looking you in the eye and laughing in your face or making your daughter, your little girl, cry in the front row. That's perfectly acceptable. But he's a man of honor. He didn't ask for Jimmy Uso to interfere last week. But he admits that he benefited from it. He said nobody is perfect, but he comes very, very close. He then turned his attention to WrestleMania and who his opponent is going to be. He said that he sees what everybody is saying online, and he brought up Sami Zayn, and people cheered. He brought up Chad Gable, and people cheered, although not quite as much, but they cheered. He mentioned The Miz, and I'm thinking, who the fuck is asking for The Miz to wrestle Gunther at WrestleMania? We just saw The Miz wrestle him twice. Nobody is asking for The Miz to wrestle Gunther at WrestleMania. Not even Maurice is asking for The Miz to wrestle Gunther at WrestleMania. But he had to throw The Miz's name in there. He mentioned R-Truth, and of course everybody lost their minds because everybody loves R-Truth. So that brought out the Judgment Day. All the members except for Rhea Ripley, and for R-Truth, the one that everybody cheered and wanted to see. He didn't come out with them. He must still be. I thought maybe he was still stuck in Austria. That was the story. He thought Elimination Chamber was in Austria, so he flew himself there, and then he realized that nobody was there. But then he showed up later in the show, so I guess he flew home. So we got a standoff in the middle of the ring between Imperium and the Judgment Day. Damian Priest said they don't sweat Gunther. And he acknowledged that Gunther has had a dominant run, and he said that it was second only to the run that the Judgment Day has had. He said the Judgment Day intends to add more gold at WrestleMania and said that includes the Intercontinental title. Gunther said that, since it looks like you're not going to be cashing in your briefcase right here and now, he wanted to know which member would it be. He said, is it going to be Finn Balor? Is it going to be the guy with the big head? Pointing at McDonough. But it was not McDonough. It was not Balor. Dominic Mysterio steps up to Gunther. It looked like it was taking everything in this man's being not to bust out laughing. This is a man in Dominic who, if the reports are to be believed, was going to be wrestling Brock Lesnar last weekend at the Elimination Chamber. And so he didn't wrestle Brock Lesnar, but now he wants to step to Gunther. Apparently this boy has a death wish. He said the Judgment Day backs up what they say. Gunther gave Dom a very light shove. That pissed off Damian Priest, who went at him, but he had to be held back and restrained by the other members. The fans chanted to let them fight. Priest told Gunther that the Intercontinental title was coming to the Judgment Day, whether he likes it or not. And they left at that point. So an unexpected development here with Gunther and Damian Priest that I did not see coming. Later in the show, I'm going to skip ahead here because this all ties together. A few segments later, Adam Pearce was on the phone in the back. He was on the phone with Bronson Reed, another one. He was not at the Elimination Chamber. He and his wife just had a baby. So he is at home with mother and child. But he was having a conversation with Pearce. We don't know what they were talking about. We can only hear Adam Pearce say that he was going to take something under consideration. Chad Gable walks in. No Alpha Academy. So there's no Otis, there's no Tozawa doing a stupid funny dance, there's no Maxine Dupri sticking her fingers up in the air. It's Chad Gable in a suit, all by himself. And he walks in, and he says, here's Gunther is looking for a challenger for WrestleMania. And I'm sitting here going, yes. Finally. Yes. He said he's still haunted by Gunther reducing his daughter to tears in their last match that they had, and then laughing at her misery and calling him a terrible father. Gable said that this means more to him than just the title. This is about so much more. And Pierce said it definitely gives him something to think about. So I was very happy to see Chad Gable, get an opportunity here to cut a promo and acknowledge his history with Gunther, because here we are now on the road to WrestleMania, and that means that there's still hope. It's keeping hope alive that we will get that rematch at some point, if not at WrestleMania. Now, you think back to the promo that Gunther cut, right, where he was saying, who's going to step up and challenge me at WrestleMania? He rattled off a whole bunch of names, right? He mentioned Sami Zayn. He mentioned Chad Gable. He mentioned The Miz, but I'll forgive him for that. Like he said, nobody's perfect. He mentioned R-Truth. And my first thought when he started rattling off all these, and of course Dominic also Dominic stepped up to him. That's funny. My first thought when he starts rattling off all these names is, all right, well, maybe they're going to do a multi-man match. Right? We've seen that before at WrestleMania. We've seen multi-man ladder matches for the Intercontinental title. So maybe they're just going to try to shove everybody into one match. And, again, I don't want that. That doesn't appeal to me. When it comes to Gunther in the Intercontinental title, I would much rather see him in a one-on-one situation at WrestleMania, especially if there's the possibility that he might lose. And I say possibility because it is not a guarantee that he is going to lose. Remember, the match was going to be him and Brock Lesnar. I don't think that he was going to lose to Brock Lesnar. I think he was going to win, which means he was going to retain if his title was even on the line at all. And so if the idea was for him to retain anyway, there's a very good chance he is not going to lose at WrestleMania. So it is not a foregone conclusion that his run is about to come to an end. But the idea of putting him, let's say, like in a ladder match or something, it just doesn't feel right to me. Like, Gunther doesn't need to be in a ladder match. He's not a ladder match guy. All these other guys is that's one thing, but him, it just doesn't fit. You know, he was in a ladder match once. It was at the Madison Square Garden show. I think it was, God, it was probably not this past Christmas, but the Christmas before, I think it was. And it was like a 6-man ladder match, and he defended the title in there. But again, it's not the sort of thing that I really have an interest in seeing him in. But I also think, well, if they were going to take the title from him, but they didn't want to beat him, that's their out. You put him in any kind of multi-man match, especially a ladder match, where there are no pinfalls, he could lose the Intercontinental title. You can get that belt off of him. If you feel like it's time to get it off of him, he's done all he can do, you know, we're ready to transition him into something bigger, and he can go after the world title, which he should be doing soon. And so we can beat him without beating him. Somebody pulls the belt down, they're the champion, he's not pinned. That would be a cop-out. It would be a cheap way, but it would be a way to get the belt off of him if that's what they wanted to do. So I tweeted about the possibility of this multi-man match, and then Tony, one of my followers, tweeted at me, and he suggested the idea of doing a multi-man ladder match on night one, and the winner of the ladder match would become number one contender and would get the title shot against Gunther on night two. And then the light bulb went off, and I said, that's perfect. That is the perfect scenario. It checks all the boxes. You want to get all these people on the WrestleMania card that maybe you don't have a role for? You want to really make this Intercontinental title feel like the most sought-after thing on this entire show? Then you spend the next 5 weeks having people step up and say, I want the shot. Tell me what I got to do. Tell me what I need to do to get the shot at Gunther at WrestleMania. And Adam Pearce, ultimately, he's going to hear the pitches from all these different people like he did tonight. I don't know what he talked to Bronson Reed about. Probably about challenging Gunther. We saw Chad Gable. He wants a shot. Sami Zayn, he's probably going to want a shot. And so Adam Pearce can come out and say, look, you all want the same thing, but only one of you can get it. So I'm going to give you the opportunity. And at WrestleMania on night one, because we got two fucking nights, I'm going to take 6 men. Could be 8. 6 men. You guys are going to have a ladder match. The winner of that ladder match gets Gunther one-on-one for the Intercontinental title on night 2 of WrestleMania. So if you want to win that title, you've got to go through 5 other men in a ladder match, and then 24 hours later, you have to go one-on-one with this man. So if Chad Gable or Sami Zayn or whoever is going to win the championship, right, they're going to earn that fucking title. Because look at what they have to go through to get there. I love that idea. I think that's great. It keeps Gunther out of the ladder match. And the lineup is simple. It's very simple. Really, all you need is 6 men, okay? You need 6 men here. Now, Damian Priest is not going to be a part of this. The Miz is not going to be a part of this. R-Truth is not going to be a part of this. Because Damian Priest and Finn Balor should defend the tag team titles against Miz and R-Truth at WrestleMania. So you take 4 of them out of the equation. You got Sami Zayn. That's 1. Chad Gable. 2. Okay, Bronson Reed, 3. Dominic Mysterio, 4. Andrade was on the show tonight. There was a backstage segment a little after this where Dom bumped into Andrade and said, hey, old pal, how you been? And they were all, you know, chummy. And Andrade teased that, you know, he was waiting to find out from Adam Pearce who his first opponent on Raw was going to be. Implication being that it may end up being Dominic. This never occurred to Dominic, and he said, oh, okay, great, and he walked off. Andrade, put him in there as well, right? He'd fit in there like a glove. So that's 5. Who's number 6? Sheamus. Sheamus. Now, I don't know where he's been. He was hurt. Apparently, he was healed, but he still is not back on TV. The Brawling Brutes are dead. Rest in peace. They're not a thing anymore. We last saw him on SmackDown. It's been a few months. Get him on Raw. Very simple. He shows up. He's a free agent. His contract ran out. Adam Pearce signs him to a Monday Night Raw contract. Sheamus is on Raw. You add him to the ladder match. You got your 6 men right there. There you go. And now the thing I love about that lineup is, out of those 6 men, realistically, there's 4 names in there that could conceivably go on, believably, could go on to wrestle Gunther the next night. Sami Zayn, Chad Gable, Andrade, I could see Andrade going, right? He would be the least likely of the four, but I could see that. Or Sheamus, right? Sheamus has his own story with Gunther and the Intercontinental title that he wants to finish. Chad Gable has his own story with Gunther and the title that he wants to finish. And then there's Sami Zayn. I love it. It's perfect. That's exactly what they should do. And it would help fill, you know, television time between now and then. You have all these men talking about why they need to be the one to go and get the shot. And it's, I think, the right way to go about doing it is to separate it, make use of the two nights that you have. One leads right into the other. I think it's smart. I think that's the way to go. Now, Priest and Balor and Dom and McDonough, they were in the back walking. Priest told the others that he was calm, because again, he was a hothead earlier, so he was calm. Rhea Ripley showed up, and she was questioning Dom. She goes, "Gunther, really? What are you thinking?" And he reassured her that everything was going to be okay. He said, "I got this." So he went to go leave after they told him, you know, she walked away. And Balor's like, "Look, you should probably go smooth this over." He goes, "You're right." And as he went to go turn away to go find Rhea, that's when he bumped into Andrade. And we already talked about this. Up next, we had The New Day and we had Imperium in a street fight. Michael Cole called it a feud that has been ongoing for 2 years. I assume he meant 2 months, but I can't fault him because honestly, it feels like this feud has been going on for 2 years. So it's an understandable mistake. New Day came out wrestling in San Jose Sharks jerseys. They had their names on them. Kingston and Woods, they tried to pull a table out from underneath the ring, but they were attacked before they could set it up. Kingston and Woods went to the ring. They went for stereo moves. Kofi hit a dive out of the ring. Woods, I don't know what happened here. It looked like he stopped short at the very last minute, but then he followed through. He was doing like a basement drop kick through... might have been the middle and bottom rope or the top and middle rope, but he kind of stopped first and then did it and kind of barely grazed him, so that didn't really look right. So they went to commercial. Coming out of commercial, they were brawling in the crowd, quickly made their way back to ringside, though. The only thing, if I had one critique about this match, because it was the blow-off, I hope, and because it was a street fight, it wasn't false count anywhere, but I wish they would have done more brawling in the crowd or maybe up onto the concourse or, you know, just made use of their surroundings more. The majority of the match was spent in and around the ring, so that was the only real critique that I had about it. So they quickly made their way back down to ringside. The crowd was chanting for tables. Kaiser pulled a table out. He got cheered. So then basically he said, "Fuck you." He slid it back under the ring because he's a heel and he does not want your cheers. He's got Tiffany Stratton at home. He does not need your cheers. Kaiser brought a chair inside the ring. He started to work over Woods with it. Kingston was down at ringside, so he couldn't do anything. Kaiser and Vinci, they placed a table in front of Woods, who was hung up in a tree of woe. Kaiser and Vinci then hit simultaneous drop kicks on the chair. Kaiser came in from one angle. Vinci came in from the other. And Woods ended up falling out of the ring to the floor. Kofi returned. He hit a crossbody block, took out both men. Kofi hit an SOS on Vinci and then slammed Kaiser on top of him. And Kofi then set up a table on the floor, and he tried to suplex Kaiser from the ring out and over through the table. Vinci, though, cut him off, and then he and Kaiser double suplexed Kingston back into the ring instead. Woods came back briefly. Vinci, though, sent him back to the floor, and then Kaiser joined him in battering Woods with kendo stick shots. Kaiser got a running start for a move outside on Woods. I mean, he backed up all the way. Like, he walked around the ring. He was building up a head of steam here. And so here comes Kaiser, but as Kaiser is coming in, rounding the bend, before he could make contact with Woods, here comes Kofi, who launches himself off the ring steps, and he blasts him in the head with a knee strike. Vinci then put Kofi down with a wicked clothesline. And then back in the ring, Vinci, man, let me tell you something here. When he gets going here, he's a scary dude, because he murdered him with that clothesline. And then when he got Woods in the ring, he took that kendo stick, and he was just beating the shit out of him with it. And then Kaiser came in, and he had a chair, and They were beating this man down. Kingston and Woods, they fought back. They ended up getting kendo stick shots in of their own. Xavier told Kofi to get the tables, doing their best Dudley Boy impression. Both men went to ringside and pulled out a table. Kingston placed Vinci on the table and held him there. Woods went up top, hit a top rope diving elbow, which looked great, right through the table. Back inside, Kingston draped Vinci over his knee while Woods stomped him. And New Day had the win in hand until Kaiser pulled the referee out of the ring before he could make the three count. Kingston and Woods, they set up for the Midnight Hour, which Michael Cole noted was a tribute to Big E. Vinci, though, shoved Kingston off the top rope, and Kofi took a bump through the table, crashed and burned. That took care of Kofi Kingston. Vinci bashed Woods with a cookie sheet, and then Kaiser ran Woods into a chair that was wedged in the corner between the ropes, and then he got a deep roll-up, and there was no kicking out of that. That's a win for Imperium. As WWE street fights go, this was as physical a match as you're going to see. These two teams went out there. There were some highlight reel bumps in there, especially with Kofi there at the end through the table. Woods with the diving elbow through the table like he was Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam back in 2002 when he came back. It was a physical match. It really was. And you're not going to get blood. There are things that you are just not going to get in WWE when it comes to a street fight or a hardcore match. You'll get stuff in AEW. See, it's weird. Like, AEW, you'll get too much. In WWE, you won't get enough. There's, like, no happy medium here. But I thought it was very good. I thought that for a match that was supposed to be the blow-off to a long feud, I thought they did it justice and they went out there, and I thought they did a very good job of living up to that bill. And I think also that in this feud, New Day brought the best out of Imperium, because Imperium were job bait. That's what they were. Gunther has been booked strong from day one, from the moment he got called up. But Kaiser and Vinci, I mean, they were out there like enhancement guys. They couldn't get a win to save their lives. And then this feud started, and all of a sudden they were able to rack up wins. We saw what Kaiser did to Kofi when he injured him all those weeks ago, right? That was a vicious attack. We hadn't seen that side of Ludwig Kaiser yet. And now here in the street fight, again, these guys are going out there. There were no jokes. New Day wasn't out there doing jokes and playing instruments and doing all the stuff that you're used to seeing them doing. Week after week, we had a chance to see a more serious side of Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. And it's a welcome change, because they've been doing the same shtick for years. Now we got to see a more serious side of them. It was refreshing. So I think these two teams brought the best out of each other. And I can only hope that that continues. Whatever they're going to move on to now, you know, coming out of this, I hope that they can, you know, stick with it. I'm not saying that New Day has to come out there and be pissed off and angry every single week, but it's nice to see that side of them more often. We had Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark against Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. Earlier in the day, Baszler and Stark said that they did not appreciate that Indy and Candice got a women's tag team title shot on Saturday, just because Indy is from Australia. They found this highly offensive. They told Asuka and Kairi to pay attention to tonight's match because they would make their opponents tap out. And then they would do the same to Asuka and Kairi and then finally become the women's tag team champions. That's what they said. I don't think it's going to work out that way, but I'm just reporting to you what they said. In the match here, Baszler stuffed an early DDT attempt by Candice and then hit her with a knee strike. She bent LeRae's arm and then stomped on it. Zoe tagged in. She targeted the arm as well. Indy eventually tagged in, hit a spinebuster on Zoe. Baszler had already tagged in, though. And so she caught Indy from behind, locked her in the Karafuta clutch, and Indy quickly tapped out. So I'm glad that Indy Hartwell got her moment in front of her fellow countrymen on Saturday, because that's probably the only moment that she is going to get. It's very clear that she and Candice are not going to be the focal point of anything anytime soon. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to take a select few number of women's teams and really try to build them up. The crowd didn't care about any of this. The crowd was flat. Not that this went very long. This went maybe 2 minutes. But, you know, they've got to try to build up some of these teams. They don't have much of a division. So take two or three teams and really try to book them strong and build them up. That's what they're trying to do with Shayna and Zoe. But problem is, none of these women are over. And that's a problem. Now, R-Truth was shown inside the Judgment Day clubhouse. He was sitting there. And The Miz, Johnny Gargano, and Tommaso Ciampa joined him inside. And they were wondering what he was doing there. And Truth said that Judgment Day was gone for the night, and he was just thinking about the good old days. And Ciampa said that he had a plan. Their plan was to take out the Judgment Day. And he asked Truth, are you ready? Because again, Truth thinks that Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa are Shawn Michaels and Triple H. So they asked him, are you ready? And they all went off together, and Truth took his little portable television with him, and whatever. That was the entire segment. Then we had the Men's Elimination Chamber match winner, Drew McIntyre. One of my favorites on Raw and SmackDown is Drew McIntyre on his way to the ring to address his public. And he looked up at the WrestleMania sign and he told the crowd, "We did it." He said, "Thank you. You don't achieve success alone. Thank you for putting those hands together and praying harder than you've ever prayed in your entire life. Because of you, this happened." Drew McIntyre against Seth Rollins for the World Heavyweight title at WrestleMania. He said he feels like hell. He's jet-lagged. He was the first man in the chamber and the last man standing. And he got his eardrum busted. And after the show, the doctor told him that there's a chance he might not make WrestleMania. I knew exactly where he was going with it. I knew exactly where it was going, and he did not disappoint. And he said he looked that doctor in the face, and he said, "Who do you think I am, CM Punk?" He goes, "Nothing is going to stop me from going to WrestleMania." And then he sat down cross-legged in the middle of the ring and got a big reaction for it, too. He said, "Punk, I know it hurt you not to be in the chamber, and it probably kills you to see me in the World Heavyweight title match. But I thought about you after the match, and I wanted to do something," he said, "special for you." He said, "I know you're straight edge. I know you don't drink. So on the way home, I drank twice as much for both of us to celebrate." What can you say? I say it every week. This man is on a roll right now. It is to the point now, and I never would have said this before, because his promos were never his strong suit. In fact, when he was a babyface, some of the shit that he was doing was just fucking cringe. But as a heel, in this character that he has developed over these last several months, it has gotten to the point where I actually look forward to Drew McIntyre interview segments now. I never would have said that before. Then he invited Seth Rollins, the champ, out to the ring. So out comes Seth Rollins, the World Heavyweight Champion, and he joins McIntyre in the ring. He congratulated Drew for winning the chamber and clawing his way back to a world title match. Rollins said that McIntyre now has an opportunity to do what he has wanted to do since 2020, which is go to WrestleMania in front of a capacity crowd and wrestle for the championship. The only problem is he's got to get past him to do it. McIntyre said that he wanted Rollins to be 100%. He questioned why Rollins would be going to SmackDown to fight someone else's battle. He told Rollins that if he pisses off the bloodline, they will cost him the match at WrestleMania. He told Rollins to back off, which is great advice. I mean, the man makes a point. Why is Seth Rollins interjecting himself into something that he has no business interjecting himself into? He's not wrong. Rollins then cuts this promo. He tells McIntyre, I respect what you said, but some risks are worth taking. This is where we got melodramatic Seth Rollins. He said that he's thought about all the potential negative outcomes, and McIntyre may be right. He said, it may be an easy night for you at WrestleMania, but what if you're wrong? And he said that some risks are worth taking. Second time he said that. He said he's been selfish in his career and in his life. He said he thought gold would fill the void, but he still felt empty inside. He said that it wasn't until he had his daughter that he realized that everything is not about him. He said that taking down the bloodline is bigger than both of them. He said that if they don't take the bloodline down before WrestleMania, it's only a matter of time before they come for the World Heavyweight Championship. He said, what if his knee and his back are healthy and they can rip apart the bloodline once and for all and secure the future of this industry? Secure the future of this industry. I told you, very melodramatic here. He said that if they can do all of that, then it will just be the two of them and the World Heavyweight title at WrestleMania. And he said, may the best man win. Some risks are worth taking. That's the third time that he said that in this promo. And then he dropped the mic and he left, leaving Drew McIntyre with something to think about. And then the crowd applauded, and Seth walked back into the ring, and he took a bow. And they dropped the curtain. I think Seth Rollins, if he wants to, I don't know how many theater productions they have back in Davenport, Iowa, but maybe he could get into the theater when his career is over. Maybe he wants to do some community theater. I am loving all of the shots that Drew McIntyre continues to take at CM Punk. I'm just tickled fancy by them. But it keeps the feud at the forefront. It's smart. It's smart to keep people, just keep reminding people, right? I'm the reason why CM Punk is not here right now. I'm the reason why he wasn't in the Elimination Chamber. I'm the reason why he's not going to WrestleMania. So on and so on. By the time CM Punk comes back, all the shots and all the burns that this man is giving this guy, by the time CM Punk comes back, it's going to be a blood feud. Like these two are... these two are going to have a fucking fight pit match, which, I mean, you know, judging from his past fight history, might not be the best idea. That might not work out too well for CM Punk. But the point is, like, he's going to come back and these two are going to have a blood feud ready to go as soon as Punk is ready to get back in the ring. I thought the work was strong on the mic from Seth. You know, I mean, just the way he did it was fine. Again, some of the promos that he has cut have been very overly dramatic and a little over the top in points. But here's the thing about this. So we've seen him go to Cody Rhodes and say, look, I'll be your shield. Which, by the way, I'm going to bring that up again at the end of the show. I got something to say about that. I'll be your shield. I'll watch your back. He just told him on Saturday in Perth. He put his hand on his shoulder and told him, I got your back. Right? I got your back. He's so concerned about Roman Reigns and the bloodline. And you got Drew McIntyre out here trying to tell him, like, look, this has nothing to do with you. Just leave it alone. Now, I can understand, you know, you could think of the Seth Rollins character and why he would be upset. Because he got buried by Roman Reigns a few weeks ago. Him and that World Heavyweight title were buried by Roman Reigns. So, yes, he's got a reason to be upset. But he's out here and he's picking a fight with people on the other show, fighting for the other title that has nothing to do with the World Heavyweight title. And from Drew's perspective, I mean, look, the bloodline has no beef with Drew McIntyre. They actually helped him win last week against Cody Rhodes. They basically gave him the assist, the unintended assist. He's got no beef with the bloodline. The bloodline's not coming after the World Heavyweight title. So they're really stretching things here, making it like, oh, they're going to come for you next. You know, they're going to come for your championship. It felt to me like he was trying to convince him to join with him in like a united front heading into WrestleMania. Yes, you and I are going to fight, but let's stand together against the bloodline. So I'm not really sure exactly what he was getting at. I'm not sure exactly what this is leading to. We've been talking about the possibility of a tag team match on night one with Rock and Roman against Cody and Seth. Is there a possibility that what they're teasing here is a six-man tag on night one where it's Cody, Seth, and Drew putting their differences aside before their match at WrestleMania, taking on Roman, Rock, and Solo Sikoa? because we know Jimmy Uso is going to be occupied with Jay. Solo is the only member of the Bloodline that's really unaccounted for and has no match at WrestleMania, unless John Cena comes back and they rematch Solo and Cena, which is possible. Don't know that Cena is going to be there. So is that what they're going to do? And then in the course of the match, Drew betrays Seth just to fuck him over because, you know, why not? Puts more heat on their match on night two, and that's what leads to the babyfaces losing to the Bloodline. I don't know. I mean, is that what they're getting at here? We'll have to wait and see what they do on the show next week. So that was a little weird to me. I don't know where they're going with that. But I said at the beginning of the review, you know, at the beginning of all this months ago, it was Seth telling Drew, get over it, move on. And now here we are, and it's just a complete 180. And now it's Drew telling Seth, enough, move on. It doesn't concern you. You're obsessed with these men. Either way, I think it's not looking good for Seth Rollins to walk out of WrestleMania with the World Heavyweight title. If it was him and CM Punk, that was the original plan. There's a very good chance that Rollins was not walking out with that title. I think it goes one of two ways. He's either losing to Drew, which I would be perfectly fine with. If anybody has earned a run here, it's Drew McIntyre. Or Damian Priest is cashing in his money in the bank, and he's winning the World Heavyweight title at WrestleMania. Either way, at this moment, as we sit here now, I know it's a little early to do my WrestleMania predictions, but it don't look good for Seth Rollins. And frankly, I'm okay with that. Because Rollins has been champion since May. We are coming up soon on 1 year as World Heavyweight Champion for Seth Rollins. I don't have an issue with having a strong champion having a long run. What I have an issue with is having multiple champions having a strong run that goes too long, all at the same time. We have Roman Reigns. He is the WWE Champion. He has been the Universal Champion now for, what, almost three and a half years, right? Long fucking time. 1,200-something, 1,300-day, something like that. We have Rhea Ripley, who's coming up on 1 year as the Women's World Champion on Raw. We have Gunther, over 600 days as the Intercontinental Champion. Now we have Seth Rollins coming up on almost a year as the World Heavyweight Champion. People have to lose those titles. At some point, somebody's got to lose. Hey, Seth, you're the odd man out here. Roman's going to lose too. But I think getting the belt off Seth will shake things up and make things more interesting because, frankly, I'm bored. I'm bored, and WrestleMania feels like the right time to take that fucking thing off of him and move it on to somebody else and let Seth Rollins chase. Let him chase. Let other people chase. It doesn't matter. The title is going to be chased onto Gunther by the end of the summer anyway. Everybody else is fighting for second place. They just don't know it yet. We had Nia Jax one-on-one with Liv Morgan. Morgan went right after Nia. Nia dropped her with a Samoan drop. Nia put Morgan in a stretch muffler and then flung her face first into the middle turnbuckle. Nia went for a leg drop on the apron. Morgan dodged it, and Nia landed on her hole. Poor Nia. Liv followed with a suicide dive, and that took Nia down, and it took us into the commercial break. Jax was in control after the break, and Liv avoided a senton and then hit a missile dropkick. She followed that with a code breaker, only got a two count. Morgan dodged a charge, and Nia went shoulder first into the ring post. Didn't matter, though, because Nia caught Morgan as she dove off the apron and then drove her into the ring post. When all of a sudden, who should arrive at the scene? Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch, she attacks Nia Jax for the disqualification. Becky slams Nia's face repeatedly into the top of the announce desk. Nia, though, managed to escape when the referee held Becky back. And the camera focused on a very unhappy Liv Morgan at the end of this match. Now, in the back later, Becky was pleading her case to Adam Pearce for a match with Nia Jax. She said that she cannot move on and look towards WrestleMania until she gets her hands on Nia Jax. And Pearce said, how's next week sound? And Becky said, that sounds great. And they started to play the music that they play for the bumpers in between the segments, the raw music. And then Liv Morgan walked up to Becky Lynch, and they abruptly cut the music off like this was not expected. And Liv was very upset. She was very pissed off. And she said, not everything has to be about you. And she stormed off. So not only is Becky Lynch in a situation, she has a lot of fans, but she's going to go out there in certain cities and get more boos than cheers when she is in the ring with Rhea Ripley, because people like Rhea Ripley. Now, she's screwing over poor Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan has every right to be upset. Becky Lynch could not control herself, and she cost her the match. Nia Jax won by disqualification, and Liv Morgan did not get the chance to beat Nia. That is Becky Lynch's fault. She has every right to be upset about that. It was a very heel move by Becky Lynch, very selfish. And so what I said earlier is, Becky, now we know she's wrestling Nia next week on TV. So that's one obstacle that she now has to face on her road to WrestleMania. Liv Morgan is going to be another, because I think that'll be the next one. 2 weeks from now, it'll be Becky Lynch against Liv Morgan on Raw. Now, there may not be anything on the line. She's already punched her ticket to the title match, but it gives Becky at least some obstacles to overcome in the meantime, things to do on TV. But again, I think that was a very selfish move. I agree with Liv. She has every right to be pissed. I'd be pissed too. Kathy Kelly was interviewing Grayson Waller and Austin Theory in the back, and Waller said that Cody Rhodes had disrespected him in his home. And Cody attacked his boy, Theory. Waller said he did everything he could to stop it. Waller said that he would disrespect Rhodes in his house tonight, and the Bloodline would pick the bones. They did show Austin Theory on the side. He did not seem very amused by what Grayson Waller said, because Grayson Waller, in fact, did not do everything he could to help his friend out on Saturday. Michael Cole, at this point in the show, sent condolences to the family of Ole Anderson. For those who don't know, Ole Anderson passed away earlier today. One of the founding fathers of the Four Horsemen. He was a wrestler. He was a booker. And you will find a lot of divided and not so positive opinion about him. He just was, I think the word that I think of when I think of Ole Anderson is curmudgeon. He comes off as a curmudgeon. Any shoot interview you've ever seen him in, very negative and attacking people, very, very prickly. But that was just his personality. You know, again, he will be, I think, best known for being one of the founding fathers of the Four Horsemen. That was the original incarnation of the Horsemen. You had Ric Flair, you had Ole Anderson, you had Arn Anderson, you had Tully Blanchard, you had J.J. Dillon. That was the original crew. And after that, there were various incarnations of the Four Horsemen. Some people think the original is still the best. Some people think the version with Barry Windham there were a lot of them. Lex Luger was in the Horsemen. Sting, who, again, dumb baby face syndrome. We all know how that always worked out when Sting would put his faith and trust in Ric Flair. We had Mongo. We had Paul Roma was a member of the Four Horsemen when the deal to bring back Tully fell through because of a failed drug test. So they put Paul Roma in there. Who else was a horseman? There were a lot of different people that have been horsemen over the years. Dean Malenko, right? Dean Malenko was a horseman. Benoit was a horseman. Pillman was a horseman. Right? I said Mongo. Who else was a horseman? Was Kevin Green? Was Kevin Green ever officially a member of the horsemen? Sid, yes, Sid was a horseman. But yes, Ole was one of the OGs. Jey Uso was interviewed backstage by Jackie Redmond, and she asked how Jey would get back into the title picture. Oh, Jeff Jarrett, that's right. Well, of course, I would forget that Jeff Jarrett was a member of the Horsemen. Like, oh yeah, that guy. I forgot. This week's episode is sponsored by Factor. I am in a position where, from time to time, I get to try out a new product or a new service that I've never tried before. And I can be picky about what I like and what I don't like. And I recently had the chance to try out Factor for the first time. Factor is a meal delivery service that will ship fresh, ready-made, chef-crafted meals right to your doorstep. I just tried my first meal the other day. This one happened to be smoky Spanish chicken. I love chicken, so of course I had to go for the chicken meal. Smoky Spanish chicken with paprika potatoes and roasted pepper sofrito. Delicious. You never know what you're going to get when you pop something in the microwave, because that's literally all you have to do. You just pop it in the microwave or your oven, and you can heat it up. They do all the work for you, so that's all you need to do. And it was nice and moist, and the potatoes were really good. And there's a pork ragu with broccoli that's sitting in my fridge right now. That's going to be dinner tonight. The cool thing about Factor is that you have over 35 options a week to choose from. And they have all sorts of offerings, from keto to calorie smart to vegan and veggie. And they have over 55 nutrition-packed add-ons that help make your weekly meal planning even more enjoyable. So now it's your turn. Get started today and enjoy two-minute meals. You can fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. They've got snacks, smoothies, tons of options, including breakfast and midday bites. It's the perfect solution if you're looking for fast upscale options. It's less expensive than takeout. Every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. It's also flexible for your schedule. You can choose anywhere from 6 to 18 meals per week. You have the option to pause or reschedule your deliveries at any time. And because they're ready to heat and eat, there's no prepping. There's no prepping, there's no cooking, and there's no cleanup needed. Head to factormeals.com/solomonster50 and use the code solomonster50, that's solomonster50, to get 50% off. That's code solomonster50 at factormeals.com/solomonster50 to get 50% off. Jey Uso said that he would keep on being himself. That's how he would get back in the title hunt. He said he gets so close to something and that it always, he falls short. Because whether it's his past enemies or even his own family members. He never named Jimmy. He never directly addressed Jimmy or what he did last week. He just sort of alluded to it. Drew McIntyre walked into the picture. And now I'm thinking, man, have you not done enough damage tonight? Must you now make Jey Uso your target? He said, look, he's riding high right now, but he can relate to what Jey is going through. And he said, from the bottom of my heart, you deserve this. And Jey punched him, and they fought until they got pulled apart. And next week, the two of them are going to have a match, so that is official for next Monday. It will be Drew McIntyre against Jey Uso. The main event of the show was Cody Rhodes, one-on-one with Grayson Waller, who had Austin Theory in his corner. Lots of fans for Cody in the arena. They were loud for him at the beginning of this match. Loud Cody chants. He cleared Waller from the ring. Cole said that he had breaking news. We have breaking news on this show. This is what he said. They're saying all over the internet that Paul Heyman is backstage here in San Jose. Who are these they that they're talking about? Now, I did have one person tell me that you could see Heyman in the background during the Grayson Waller interview. So I guess, according to Michael Cole, the internet was ablaze with talk about Paul Heyman being on Raw. When they came back from commercial, Cole said it has been confirmed that Paul Heyman is indeed backstage here at Monday Night Raw. Pat McAfee wondered who else from the Bloodline was with him. Cody hit a disaster kick on Waller for a two count. Theory climbed up onto the apron and then dropped off when Cody came over. Waller took advantage of the distraction. He punched Cody, who then hit a suicide dive out onto Austin Theory. Waller went to ringside. He clotheslined Cody, rolled him back inside. Waller went for a rolling move into the ring that Cody was able to avoid. Cody hit a Cody cutter, followed that with a crossroads, and he scored the pin. Not much of a main event. Didn't go very long either. I don't even think this went a full 8 minutes. So it was fine, but nothing special. And I knew it was just a means to set up some sort of closing angle here because the match ended and it was 10:51. They had 9 minutes left in the show. So I knew something was coming here. And that something was Paul Heyman. We could hear his voice over the PA system like the voice of God. You don't see him, but you hear him. Ladies and gentlemen, comes out on stage, and he's got three men with him dressed in black. They don't have masks on, but they're all decked out in black. Cody immediately leaves the ring, goes over by the timekeeper's area, grabs a chair, brings the chair back into the ring with him. And Cody says he doesn't give a damn what his name is. If the Bloodline is here, come and get me. He sounded like Curly. He sounded like Curly from City Slickers. Come and get me. Come and get me. Come and get me. That was part two, right? when they were going for the gold, they were looking for gold up in Demdare Hills. Come and get me. Come and get me. Am I the only one who thought of Curly? Jack Palance was a great actor. I miss Jack Palance. Anyway, I'm probably the only one even thinking of this right now. Makes me very sad. City Slickers 2 is a great movie, by the way. So Heyman told Cody, look, calm down. Calm down. He pointed out that I'm not with the bloodline. You don't see anyone here with a drop of Samoan blood in them. Right? He goes, I'm the only one here representing the bloodline. He said the men in black are his friends from the NYPD. And he started to say that they were off duty, but then he said that they were actually suspended. I don't know what the hell that was about. Again, this whole Paul Heyman promo was very weird. He was stumbling over his words, which he never does. And there were at least three or four times where he started to say something and then he fucked up and, you know, said something else. Usually he's very on point. Heyman said that he understands how insulting it must be to get Will Smithed across the face. A shout out to Jace. You are now banned from Collision. Congratulations. Jack Palance was in Batman. That's right. He was. He was in Tim Burton's Batman from 89 with Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicholson and Jack Palance. So he told Cody that he needs to take The Rock's name out his frickin' mouth. Heyman said he's begging him, please. Pretty please, with a cherry on top. Please withdraw this challenge to The Rock, or else. And Cody said, or else? Or else what? You want to know why I haven't rained holy hell on this microphone about your boy Dwayne and why I haven't trashed him in the media? And I'm sitting here going, here we go. All right. It's about time. We're going to get our explanation. Here we go. I'm all ears. Cody's going to finally reveal all. You know what this man said? You know what the big reveal was? And I'm hoping it's not actually what they are going with here. But do you know what Cody said here? Cody said, it's because I, like everyone in this building, was a fan of The Rock. He said he comes from a family that every meal was determined by tickets sold. And nobody sold more tickets than The Rock. But he said, I'm done. I'm absolutely fed up with being nice, but if it's a bloodline setup, come and get me. Heyman told him, I got a better idea. And he and the geeks got up on the apron, and he asked, may I? He wanted to get in the ring, and Cody says, no, you may not. And the three men got in the ring anyway, and Cody said, let me make this clear. If one more person takes a step towards me, I am going to drop every single person standing in this ring. And Heyman said, I respect that. And he went to go take a step into the ring anyway. And so Cody grabbed the chair and he used it on the three guys. He beat them down. He dropped one of them with a crossroads. So then Heyman retreated outside the ring. And Heyman ends up pulling out not one, but two smartphones. He's got a second one now for The Rock. He pulls out his two phones. He tells one to call Roman Reigns. He tells the other one to call The Rock. He's got a fucking phone for The Rock. This is a glimpse, by the way, into what we can look forward to if Roman Reigns retains at WrestleMania. You're going to get another 6 to 12 months of call Roman Reigns. And maybe now, every now and then, it'll be call The Rock. Do you want another year of call Roman Reigns? Because I don't. He told Heyman, go ahead, call him, because the bloodline is not hunting me. I'm hunting the bloodline, which was the money line right there. The men in black got up again. Again, Cody beat them up. This time he threw them out of the ring. And the show closed with Cody standing tall. Paul Heyman was talking into his phones. I mentioned Seth Rollins earlier. I mentioned Seth Rollins telling Cody Rhodes, let me be your shield. I'm going to stand beside you in this battle with the bloodline. I got your back. Where was his shield? Where was Seth Rollins? We know he was there. He was in the segment right before this. Where was he? No Seth Rollins. Cody was surrounded. Paul Heyman was there. No Seth Rollins. I thought that was ridiculous. I don't know if the reason that Cody gave in this segment is going to be the actual reason that they're just going to settle on as far as why Cody stepped aside for Rock in the first place, because we never did get the explanation. I sure hope not. I stepped aside because I liked The Rock. I'm a fan of The Rock. I used to drop the people's elbow on my friends when I was a little coaster. He sold tickets. That's not a fucking explanation. When you go out there and you win the Royal Rumble and you get fucked at WrestleMania and you spend the next year of your life scratching and clawing and fighting your way back up to the top and you win the Royal Rumble for the second time, which is a very rare thing. He's only the fourth man ever to do that. You don't turn around because I have respect for this man. I like this man. This man sold tickets. It's The Rock. So I'm going to step aside. That can't be the explanation. I am trying to be optimistic here that they will have something that is not so lame, but the fact that they teased that he was going to come out with it tells me that they've got something up their sleeve. And in one of these segments in these next few weeks, we might actually get some more clarity on exactly why Cody did what he did, because I don't think that they would allude to it unless they were planning on actually telling us the reason. I sure hope not. I sure hope they got something in mind here. Honestly, this angle here at the end of the show was not really much of an angle. It actually felt to me like they were stalling for time a little bit there at the end. It kind of dragged, like they were just standing around. It felt to me, I was expecting something to happen where he was going to get ambushed or Rollins would come out. Something was going to happen, and then nothing happened. The guys in black got up. He beat him up again, threw him out of the ring, and posed. So it was just very weird. And again, Heyman felt off. There was something off about this entire segment. The thing that I liked the most about it, though, Cody, what the fire that he had in his promo. So many times when Cody Rhodes comes out here, he's in the suit. What do you want to talk about, right? He's like a politician out there. He's very calm and cool, very much like John Cena in that way. And I think that's on purpose. I think Cody wants to be the next John Cena. And who wouldn't be, right? John Cena was the face of the company. He was the guy for so long. He was like the perfect person that you would want in that position. He was the narrator of the company. He would come out on television and literally narrate some of the different things that were going on with other people on the show, right? He wants to be the John Cena of Monday Night Raw. And John Cena rarely came out and was ever angry about anything. John Cena always came out there with a smile on his face. John Cena could have lost the world championship on pay-per-view the night before. He could have then, after losing the world title, been loaded up on a forklift. They could have elevated the forklift up in the air, and they could have dumped him into a fire pit. He would have walked out on Raw the next night without a scratch on him and a big smile on his face. With a new t-shirt. Like, nothing would faze that man. But tonight, we got to see angry Cody Rhodes. He was out there. He was pissed. He said, I'm not taking this shit anymore. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Good. That's the Cody Rhodes we need to see on this road to WrestleMania. The man got smacked across the face by The Rock. He should be pissed off about that. I want to see more of this Cody Rhodes on the show. Now, this sets the stage for SmackDown on Friday because The Rock is going to be on SmackDown. In fact, The Rock is going to be on SmackDown for the next 3 weeks. The Rock is going to be making more appearances on TV than Roman Reigns. So he'll be on the show on Friday, and we'll see. I don't see him coming out there and just saying, yes, I accept your challenge. It's not going to be that cut and dry. So what does he have to say on Friday? We'll have to wait and see. But I still think the tag match is the likeliest scenario because I think The Rock is going to wrestle him against Cody one-on-one. I just don't see it. I don't see that being the match. But that was Raw. I think there was a lot to like about this show. And if I had to pick one match for you to go back and watch, it would be the street fight. But I'm loving the work that Drew is doing. I love pissed off Cody. I think that's great. And I love the focus on the Intercontinental title. I do want to hear from you guys about the idea that I talked about, though. I really do. I like that idea a lot. And I really think that's the way to go, It's a way to get all those guys on the show, but in a way that makes sense. By doing a multi-man ladder match on night one, with the winner getting a one-on-one shot with Gunther on night two. And you got Gunther up in a skybox on night one, watching that ladder match, smoking his cigar, which he does in real life, smoking his cigar with a big fat smile on his face, because he knows that everybody in that ladder match is killing each other. And they're going to be at a disadvantage on night two. It's just a tougher mountain, a tougher hill for them to climb, to get from night one and win, and then win again on night two. I think that's a perfect way to go about building towards the Intercontinental title match at WrestleMania. I think it's brilliant. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. We got 46.6% of you giving the show tonight 4 stars. 34.6% give it 3 stars. 10% 2 stars, and 8.5% give Monday Night Raw a whopping 1 star. You can go ahead and get all your stars in at Solomonster. Go ahead and vote. Let me know what you think of tonight's show. All right. And let's see what you guys have to say about pretty much everything. Everything and anything. Super chat time. Now, again, some of them, for whatever reason, are not showing up here. So I'm going to be going back and forth. I got another list over here that has everything in it. Very annoying. So this may not sync up exactly the same. But we got them all right here. All right, let's see. We go all the way back to the very beginning, and we begin with Groovy Goose. Groovy Goose dropping a super chat here saying maybe the reason why The Rock is working more dates is because he wants to prove the haters from RSPW wrong. So that's the reason why? There is an RSPW video that I did way back when. Dug up some posts from 98, I think it was. Or maybe 2000, like 98 to 2000. All this hate that The Rock was getting back when The Rock was like at his peak. Just to prove that wrestling fans were always a miserable bunch. So now he's trying to win over all the Rock haters all these years later. Is that what you're saying? I think that's a bit of a stretch. But, okay, I'll go with it. Bobby's World 2110. You and I agree on a great many things, except one. You've always said that the best broadcast team ever was Gorilla and Bobby the Brain. He says, for me, I just have to say that Michael Cole, and then I was about to say, and then he had a second super chat. He goes, haha, just play it. But I was always more partial to Gorilla and Jesse the Body, not the Brain. Not that the Brain wasn't brilliant, I just prefer Jesse's analytical approach and his arguments with Gorilla. You had me there for a second. You get no argument out of me. I think Gorilla and Jesse were great. I think Gorilla and Jesse were great. It's just that I personally got to go with Gorilla and Bobby. They were the most entertaining. Gorilla and Jesse, though, were fantastic, too. I can't hate on that. We got GMB chiming in. In your opinion, who will Bianca duel with at WrestleMania first? Rhea Ripley or Jade Cargill? I think Bianca and Rhea is going to be the WrestleMania 41 match. So I'll say Rhea Ripley. Zay97, who would you say is the best at solo promos and the best at one-on-one promo battles? The solo could go to anybody, but the best battler has to be Cena. Cena was great. Cena embarrassed The Rock on the mic, which is not an easy thing to do. Best promos is, I mean, there's so much there. I mean, there's so many options there. I mean, you could talk, you want to go more contemporary in like the last 10, 15 years, you know, how do you not have CM Punk at the top of the list? How do you not have Samoa Joe? How do you not have MJF on that list? You go back to the classics and now you're talking about the Macho Man. You're talking about Roddy Piper. You're talking about Ric Flair. I mean, there's so many options. Jake in his own way, right? He was a very different kind of promo, but he was fantastic. I can't just narrow it down to one. There were so many great ones. Luis, I hope Damian Priest does not cash in his Money in the Bank on Gunther. That will make the Judgment Day look even more stupid than they already are. Damian Priest is not going to cash in his Money in the Bank on Gunther. That is not going to happen. Prince Vegeta, thank you for the super chat. Buy or sell on the more intriguing What If Shawn Michaels dream match. Eddie Guerrero at WrestleMania 22 or AJ Styles at the Royal Rumble in 2017. So you're talking Shawn when he was younger in 2006 as compared to Shawn in 2017. Shawn and AJ would have been the bigger dream match for me, but not in 2017. Not that I didn't want to see it then, but the version of Shawn that I would have wanted in there with AJ and the version of AJ I would have wanted, you got to go back at least 5 years. So in that situation, I got to go with Shawn and Eddie in 2006. Orhan, which WrestleMania main event did you hate more? WrestleMania 32 or WrestleMania 34? Well, I had the unfortunate pleasure of being there live for both of those matches, and I didn't like either one, but you forced me to choose 34. Yeah, no, 34 was a disaster. It really was. There's a reason why when Brock went backstage, he took his belt and threw it at Vince. Either that or maybe Vince promised him a text message and didn't text him. Nick Grosso, what are your thoughts on a multi-person ladder match for the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania? That way they can take the belt off Gunther without pinning him. I don't like it. I like the idea that we talked about earlier, where you do a multi-man match on night one, Gunther gets a singles match against the winner on night two. That's the way to go. Orhan, buy or sell, more complete package. Macho Man Randy Savage or Kurt Angle? Macho Man Randy Savage or Kurt Angle as the more complete package? That's a tough one because both of them are obviously two of the goats and could pretty much do it all. They could be baby faces, they could be heels, they were charismatic. They could be funny, they could be serious, they could work their asses off. But I have always said that Randy Savage, to me, is the complete package of what a pro wrestler should be. He didn't have the big bodybuilder physique, but he looked like a pro wrestler, but he had the colorful outfits, he had the colorful promos, he could work, he could play any role you needed him to play. Like Kurt. Kurt was the same way. But Savage, to me, was more entertaining when it came to character, presentation, and promos. And that's very important. I hate to vote against Kurt, because Kurt was a machine. Kurt was fantastic. I gotta go with Macho Man. I gotta go Randy Savage. And it's close. It's very close, but I gotta go Randy Savage on that. Prince Vegeta, Shayna Baszler is the Nakamura of the women's division. She will talk shit and beat jobbers, but can never win the big fights or major titles. It's true. William Valencia. Drew continues to mention Punk in his promos. My question is, do you see a scenario where Punk cost Drew the title at WrestleMania? No, because if he costs him the title at WrestleMania and he can't wrestle for 6 months, I don't see what's accomplished by that. If Drew was going to take time off after WrestleMania, if he was going to go back home and visit family and take 3, 4, 5 months off, then maybe. But if not, what do you do? You cost him the title and then what? Punk can't work. What's he going to do? Right? I mean, it doesn't work. Jerome, what's going on, Jerome? Jerome Eugenio. Haven't heard from Jerome in a while. Usually, I used to hear from him on the main show with the PayPals. He says, this is my first super chat. Just wanted to say thank you. Your podcast has gotten me through some tough times. Jerome, I am sorry to hear that, but I hope things are getting better for you. And I am very happy that the show can be of help to you. It's good to hear from you, brother. Nick Grosso, rest in peace, Ole Anderson, one of the original Four Horsemen. 3BTV. Man, for a moment, parts of Raw felt like 1997 WWE again, where everyone was mad at each other. That is one of my favorite periods in WWE. The end of 96, beginning of 97. And it mainly was just focused around the world title. Bret, Shawn, Sid, Vader, Undertaker. They were all pissed at each other. And they all had a common goal. They all wanted to be the world champion. But everybody was pissed at everybody else. There was a little bit of that on the show tonight. Not too much, but there was a little bit of that. And I like that. And I'd like to see more of that. I think more people on these shows should be pissed off. And should take things seriously. Love Lie. In my opinion, Liv is the most interesting part of the women's division right now. More character depth and webbing across the board, please. The Moldy Cheeseburger. Hear me out. The ending of Cody against Roman at WrestleMania will be the WWE version of the Starrcade 97 finish. A screwed up one. Roman wins, LOL. Rock restarts the match and Cody wins. That would be fucking terrible. You are going to replicate the worst finish to a big match in WCW history. That is still remembered for how awful it was all these many years later. See, that's an example of what not to do. Although what you're describing, let's say nothing is screwed up. You know, even doing a kind of a false finish like that, I still wouldn't do it. I still wouldn't do it. Flavor Dave. I just got out of Raw. Thought it was pretty good. Off air, a family had Cody do a gender reveal for them. They are having a boy. I saw the video. Deb to Dust. Buy or sell or rent on these Steven Spielberg movies. Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Jurassic Park, Saving Private Ryan, E.T., Close Encounters of the Third. Why don't you just name every movie he's ever made? How am I supposed to keep track of all these movies? Well, I'll tell you right now, right off the bat, I never saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I've never seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind, believe it or not. I was never an Indiana Jones guy, but even Close Encounters, I should see Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So I'm crossing those off because I just haven't seen them. Saving Private Ryan is, I mean, it's a fantastic movie, but I saw E.T. so many times growing up as a kid. That's a personal favorite of mine. Jurassic Park is fantastic. Jaws has to be number one. Like, there's just no... To me, there's no debate. Like, Jaws is number one. So you have Jaws. And let's see. If I had to rank them, I would go Jaws. And I would go... Oh, boy. It's really a matter of personal preference because Saving Private Ryan was such a great movie, but I just... like the other ones more, so my own list, me personally, I go Jaws, Jurassic Park, E.T., and then Saving Private Ryan. Manuel Macias, and by the way, they're not frozen. Again, for whatever reason, the super chats here, we'll pick up with them. Hold on a second. Here we go. See? Now we're up. For whatever reason, it left off like the first half of them. I was reading directly from my YouTube dashboard, so no, it was not frozen. For whatever reason, they're just not all pushing out to that platform. I don't know why. Anyway, Dev to Dust, thank you for that. Alex, drop it in with a $12 super chat. And again, it's not... It's for whatever reason, it's skipping over a few. So let me go to Manuel first. Manuel with the $5 says, are AJ Styles, Bobby Lashley, Shinsuke Nakamura not a priority to Triple H because of their age? If not, what do you think it is? I wish they would be used better. I don't think it's age. I just think, you know, Nakamura at this point has been around for so long that he is just not going to be pushed as a top guy. And Triple H has used him. He had a feud with Cody. He's been doing stuff with Sammy. So he has been making use of him. He just doesn't see him at the top. Lashley Lashley gets cheered no matter what they do with him because the people like Bobby Lashley. Him being left off WrestleMania last year was ridiculous. And they hopefully will not repeat that mistake again this year. AJ, I mean, even before Triple H took over, though, I mean, AJ was not exactly being pushed in a meaningful way. I mean, age could be part of it, but I don't think you can just assign it to age. I think it's just the case where there are other people, they're trying to create new stars. And that coupled with, you know, other big names that, frankly, right now are just more of a priority than they are. It's just simple as that. I think, you know, if you try to read anything else into it, I don't think there's anything else there. I think it's just that simple. Chris Auditor says, fingers crossed we get pissed off Rock on Friday. Now we come to Alex with the $12 super chat. Alex, thank you. Alex says, Brother Solo, are you more in favor of long-term or short-term storylines? Are there any cases where a certain short-term storyline provided a better overall product than a long-term storyline? I mean, one of my favorite storylines of all time was a short-term storyline. Randy Savage and Jake Roberts, which if you were watching Raw tonight, you saw the commercials for the A&E specials. I think that's the next one. They're actually covering the feud between Savage and Jake. I mean, it kicked off technically in the summer, and it went to February, so, you know, I don't know if you'd call that short-term, but to me it was short-term because we never really got a big blow-off match between them on a pay-per-view. You know, we had a match between them in November, they had a rematch in February, and it was over. I mean, there was so much more that they could have done with that storyline, and yet it's still one of my favorites. I still love it to this day. I think you want to have a mix of both. I don't think every storyline needs to be long-term. I think you want to have a mix of some long-term stories that are compelling and interesting, like Sammy and the Bloodline was, right? That was a blockbuster storyline for them, right? It just worked. And you can't always predict these things. That was an example of a long-term storyline that had a great payoff to it. But not everything can be long-term over 6 or 9 months or a year, you know? Sometimes you have a quick hit, 2-3 months, and you could have a great story. Why not have both? I don't want to just have short-term. I don't want to just have long-term. I think you have a mix of both. It's the way I would do it. Chris AXC says, naive of me, I know, but for a second when Gunther asked for his WrestleMania opponent, the fanboy in me thought we were going to hear Okada's coin flip. One can dream. Well, look, I mean, nothing has been officially confirmed yet, but I am not expecting that we are going to see Nakamura in a WWE ring. I would be very surprised if we see him in a WWE ring. Samuel Hayworth, I would not do the night one IC contenders match as a ladder match. They are overdone and Money in the Bank is not that far off either. So just a normal six-way. I don't care either way. I would be okay if they made it a ladder match with a contract hanging above the ring. I think that's fine. Or you can hang some woo wings. First person to pull the wing down gets a shot at the title. Bae Spears, thank you. Well, look, whatever stipulation you give it, I just like the idea of separating the two. I think that's absolutely the right way to do it. But, you know, a ladder match at WrestleMania, like a multi-man ladder match at WrestleMania, it's been a while since we've had something like that, so I think it's fine. I think it's fine either way. Barry MK. What's going on, Barry? Thank you for the $10 super chat. Very much appreciated. Barry says, let's say we change the actor of the main character from your favorite movie with Liv Morgan. Everything is the same, but Liv is playing the role. How does the movie look like now? So Liv is Batman in The Dark Knight. I don't like that. I don't think the movie would be as good. Liv Morgan is not tall enough to play Batman. That doesn't work. Alex, thank you for the $10. What a weird question. With live television matches consistently interrupted by commercials, how do you think WWE can fix this to allow matches to air longer? It's not up to them. It's not up to them. It's up to the network. And it will be different when they go to Netflix next year. There will be commercials. We know there are going to be commercials. But I don't think they're going to be as disruptive. I actually think, even if there are commercials, I feel like it's going to be an improvement over the situation that we have now. The problem also I have is that it's so formulaic. Like, you can tell. Like, you just know. You can feel it. When they're going to go to a commercial, when the camera goes down to the person on the ground, you know what Michael Cole is going to say. Can so-and-so come back? Can so-and-so recover? Like, it's just so fucking formulaic that when they go to Netflix, I do think it'll be different, but unfortunately, I don't think we're going to be free of the commercials interrupting certain matches. I think that's just something that's unavoidable. I mean, they format their show around things, but I think ultimately it's up to the network. You know, I don't really... And like when they have those weeks where we get the commercial-free first hour, it's like, oh, okay, great, we get a commercial-free first hour. But I dread it because you just know the second and third hour are going to be insufferable with commercials. Just because they have a commercial-free first hour does not mean they're not going to get their shit in. They're just gonna backdoor it into the last 2 hours of the show. So I always laugh when they go, oh, it's commercial-free. I'm like, ugh. That second hour is going to be miserable. Christian. Seth said, I'm getting that damn Mania main event. LMAO. Well, you know what? That's about as good of an explanation as anything for why he's inserting himself into that situation. That, you know what? That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. He has decided that I am going to do whatever I need to do to make absolutely certain that I do not get fucked out of a WrestleMania main event. So I'm just going to insert myself into as many different situations as I possibly can, and therefore it will be impossible for me not to get a WrestleMania main event. If he would just come out and say that on TV, I'd have a lot more respect for him. Base Beer says, rest in peace, Oli. Henri Oli. He was an ornery fellow. Yes, he was. He was very ornery. There were a lot of people that Oli Anderson did not like, especially Ric Flair. He did not like Ric Flair. Jace with the super chat coming in here. $7 chat. WrestleMania 40 could begin a new exciting era with possibly two new world champions and a new intercontinental champion. It makes for many interesting combinations of matches thanks to the number of stars created during this time. Are we sure this wasn't AI? I'm kidding. Jace, thank you. Now look, we could very well end up with two different world champions when WrestleMania is over. I hope we do. Anything other than Roman losing that title is just unacceptable. And I think the World Heavyweight title should go to Drew, or if Priest cashes in, I'm okay with that too. I'm ready to see Seth Rollins drop that title. Now, are they going to drop all of them? That's hard to imagine. It's hard to envision both world titles, both secondary titles, so Logan Paul and Gunther losing. The tag titles, I do think, are going to change hands, the men's tag titles. As I sit here right now, I don't think Rhea Ripley is losing. And I don't think Gunther is losing. So I think those titles are going to stay where they are. But I think the other ones, it's tough. I don't know what they're doing with the U.S. title yet. I don't know if they're going to do Randy and Logan one-on-one, or if they're going to do a multi-man. I'm not sure. But I just feel like Gunther and Rhea, I feel like their titles are not gonna change. But we got 5 weeks to go. Let's see what they do on TV. HydroGrad57 with the $15 super chat. HydroGrad, thank you. Say what you want about Oli, but him making Rob Feinstein nervous and stumble over his words during that RF video shoot interview was absolutely incredible. that was something to behold. It was actually quite enjoyable to see him make old Feinstein over there as uncomfortable as possible. Kung Fu Joseph. Buy or sell on the worst Cody plans after WrestleMania win. He continues his rivalry with Roman in the Bloodline until the end of the summer, or Cody becomes Super Cena. Well, I don't need to see Cody become Super Cena. I guess that depends on how you define Super Cena. Is that him winning all of his matches? Does that make him Super Cena? Because Cody's going to win the title at WrestleMania. He shouldn't lose until he loses the title, which shouldn't be at least until SummerSlam. Does that make him Super Cena? How do you define Super Cena? Jace with another super chat. In my opinion, only Rhea and the Kabuki Warriors should retain their titles after WrestleMania 40. The rest should lose. What do you think? Also, I love the idea of using both nights regarding the IC title. I'm with you on Rhea. The Kabuki Warriors, I don't know who they're going to defend against. For a while there, I thought what they might do is put Jade and Bianca together and have them challenge for the tag team titles and win them. I don't feel that way anymore. I feel like Bianca and Tiffany Stratton could be a match at WrestleMania, and then if they do anything with Jade, I could see Jade against Nia. So you may be right, because, I mean, the Kabukis against who? Who would they lose the belts to? Who are they going to lose the belts to? Zoe and Shayna? Candice and Indy? Going to lose them back to Caden Carter and Katana Chance? Maybe. Maybe. Chris Mikesell with the $9.99. If you could rebook the 1999 King of the Ring, who would you have gone over? They failed with Mr. Ass. Who else would you like to build up instead? I can't give you an answer. I don't remember even what the entire roster looked like in 99. In June of 99, who was in the tournament? I mean, they had X-Pac was in the tournament. I don't even remember offhand who else was in the tournament. I'd have to go back and even see who else was in there. I don't even know who I would have been rooting for at the time. In 99, June of 99, I don't know. DEH says, Liv will interfere in Becky's match next week. I think you're right. Also, Triple H is going to tease when Liv against Becky happens. If Liv wins, it becomes a triple threat match at WrestleMania, but ultimately Becky will win. Yeah, but you're going to have a really good reason for that, because Becky won the Elimination Chamber. She should get a one-on-one match. So, you know, it's kind of like with Sammy, when I thought maybe they were going to put Sammy in the match with Seth and Drew. I guess it's kind of the same thing, where you could have had Sammy cutting promos on Drew and somehow he convinces him, or Drew says, all right, you want in so badly, you got to beat so-and-so. And if you beat this person, then, you know, I'll allow them to put you in the match or something like that. With Liv, you know what, though? The match is not Liv and Becky and Rhea. The match is Becky and Rhea. Like, that's it. That's the match. It's like putting Charlotte in there with Becky and Ronda. Like, it should have been Becky and Ronda. You didn't have to shoehorn Charlotte in there, but they did. Liv Morgan is probably going to wrestle Becky Lynch on TV. Liv Morgan is going to lose. Liv Morgan should not be in that match. Holiday 197. What's going to happen with Sami Zayn at WrestleMania? I hope we will get Gunther against Priest with the Money in the Bank cash-in versus Zayn, who will find a way into that match. Damian Priest should not be cashing in Money in the Bank on anything but the World Heavyweight title. Guy's held the fucking briefcase for almost a year. Not cashing it in for the Intercontinental title. Will Chisholm. Seth sounding like Apollo Creed in Rocky 3 when he tells Rocky there is no tomorrow if Roman wins at WrestleMania. Base Beer says, what happens first? GTA 6 release or the Riley Cena story releases? Probably GTA 6. PB and Shane. I don't get the idea of Cody and Seth against Rock and Roman on night one. Wouldn't that lessen Drew's victory if he beat a less than 100% Seth? That's what Drew was saying on the show tonight. I'm telling you, Drew is making all the sense in the world. But just because it doesn't make sense doesn't mean that that's not going to be the mesh they do. Base Beerus says, I thought your favorite was Halloween. Liv Myers. Halloween's my favorite scary movie, absolutely. And it's one of my favorite all-time movies. I didn't necessarily say it was the number one favorite movie. Some people will never know how bad the anonymous GM was. Well, you had to live through the era to truly understand how fucking absurd it all was. Retro KOH says, buy or sell, Mike Adamly or the anonymous general manager laptop? I got to buy on Mike Adamly, man. The guy, look, say what you want about him. He was terrible at the position they gave him. But as we now know, we didn't know it at the time, that he, you know, he had issues. And CTE and other issues that he was experiencing that we weren't aware of. But he was entertaining. Maybe not in the way that they intended, but it was a hell of a lot more entertaining than the fucking laptop was. Kung Fu Joseph. Buy or sell, worst WrestleMania plans. Cody loses to Roman or Cody wins, but the match is booked by Russo with all of the Russo booking shenanigans in the match. Cody losing to Roman would be awful. Absolutely awful. That is the only correct answer. Cody cannot lose to Roman Reigns or WrestleMania. Hey, Eminem, 200-183, just gifted a channel membership. Thank you, Eminem. My favorite Eminem. I haven't had M&Ms in a long time, but my favorite Eminem is the red Eminem. See, you learn a little something more about me each week. The super chat goal, the likes goal. The likes goal was 450, and we are officially over 500, so thank you very much. Please keep hitting that thumbs up button, and while you do that, I will take you into this. It's time to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
It's time to kick off a new week. We do it in style. We be the booker. That's what we do here. When we hit the goal, it triggers be the booker automatically. Okay. We had a good week last week until Eva Marie screwed it all up on Saturday, and then everything just fell apart. So now we start from scratch. And we begin with a fine choice. Jay and Mark, the Briscoes. The Briscoes. One of the best tag teams we probably have here in Be the Booker. 13 times Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions. And it will be the Briscoes. And Adam Pearce and Von Wagner say add a stipulation. You know, I forgot about the 1 week on TV that Von Wagner just so happened to be in Adam Pearce's office. You know, Von Wagner is a free agent. And he is a free agent who is so sought after that in nearly a year of free agency, he has not showed up on Raw or SmackDown. Nobody wants him. Adam Pearce doesn't want him. Nick Aldis doesn't want him. But we have to pick a stipulation. So before we pick their opponents, let's see what match type it's going to be. The Briscoes are going to be in what kind of match? The Briscoes are going to be in Solomonster's Choice. Huh. I get to make the choice. Well, I don't normally get to make the choice. I am going to choose a dog collar match. That's what I'm going to pick. So we're going to have the Briscoes in a dog collar match. And they are going to be taking on Dennis Condrey and beautiful Bobby Eaton, the Midnight Express. Did the Midnight Express have any dog collar matches back then? I don't remember. The Briscoes and the Midnights in a dog collar match. We're going old school. I like it. I like it. How's that for a match? Very cool. All right, women's Be the Booker. You like that match, huh? You like it. We did good. We did good. All right, women's Be the Booker here. We begin with Dakota Kai. The supposedly cleared Dakota Kai, who is wrestling alongside Bayley on Friday against Damage Control. Hey, Nicholas, welcome to the channel. Nicholas Christakos. So we have Dakota Kai. And let's see who she is. This is going to be her first match back. We're actually beating them to the punch on SmackDown. We're having Dakota's first match back here on Be the Booker. And it will be Dakota Kai taking on Michelle McCool. How are we feeling about this? I'm on the fence. Dakota Kai and Michelle McCool for the Divas title. Gonna hit the bell. I'll give him the bell. I was a little on the fence. It's like that meme with the guy, he's wiping the sweat off his brow, he doesn't know which button to push. Could have gone either way. I'm in a good mood though, so I'll give it the bell, even though she stole AJ Styles' move, but that's okay. All right, men's main event. Let's go. Here we go. Kurt Angle, looking a little rough here. This is, this is not Kurt. Allow me to introduce you to my friend. This is Perk. Perk Angle, everybody. Why does he looks homeless in this picture. Why does he look homeless? I swear to God. He just, look at the look in his eye. Perk Angle. I'm laughing at that look in his eye and the smirk on his face. Oh, boy. Perk Angle was he's a different kind of cat, this guy. He may look like he's not all there, but he can still go out there and have the best match on the show. All right, here we go. Perk Angle, is even though he really should not be in the ring, he is really in no condition to perform. But we're gonna pick his opponent anyway. Perk Angle, one-on-one with Sabu. The homicidal, genocidal, suicidal Sabu. I'm not really a big Sabu guy, but Perk Angle and Sabu, it would be entertaining. I don't know what they would do in that match. I kind of fear for what they would do in that match, but I guess that's what makes it so entertaining. Perk Angle and Sabu. Three in a row. We'll see how we do on Wednesday. If we hit the goal, we'll try again. Base Beerus, do you really feel like Priest is ready for the World Heavyweight title? You think he's not? I think that Damian Priest has impressed a lot of people in that company. And really, coming out of that match with Bad Bunny last year, you started to hear that, you know, there were a lot of people very impressed with how things went in that story and how the match went. And they really started to trust him more and depend upon him. And I think his work is solid. So, yes, I think the Damian Priest, if they wanted him to cash in and win, I don't see it being a long run, but I think he's more than ready to be world heavyweight champion. I mean, what are the holes in his game? There's nothing wrong with his in-ring work. His promos have improved from where they were back in the NXT days. You know, he's basically the de facto promo cutter in the Judgment Day. Every single week, the Judgment Day has been pushed like the Bloodline was, and still is, on SmackDown. That's what we've had for the last year with the Judgment Day. They've been the most dominant thing on the show. So he's a well-established star on the program. His work is rock solid. His promos are good. Where's the issue? And he's got the one thing they love more than anything else. He's tall. He's got size. So what's not to like? Mystic J, do you find it odd that there has not been any mention of the Hall of Fame as of now? It makes me wonder if they are going through with it this year. I guarantee you they are going through with the Hall of Fame this year. Just be patient. I am expecting in the next week or two we're going to get the first announcement, and I am still expecting that Bray Wyatt is going to be the headline inductee. So give it a week or two, and I think we'll have that first name announced. Got a message coming in here from Lovelie. Lovelie says, do you care to see Liv and Rhea at any point after WrestleMania? Liv has the best story with her, and it would be creative malpractice not to return to that feud. I have no issue with that. That's fine. It's just not the match of WrestleMania. If Rhea Ripley retains at WrestleMania, and frankly, even if she doesn't, you can definitely do Rhea and Liv coming out of WrestleMania. Yes. That could be the Backlash match. Backlash is in France, right? Another big international show. You could do Rhea and Liv at Backlash. Eminem with the $4.99. I'll be heading to AEW this Wednesday in my town of Huntsville, Alabama. They will be doing Dynamite and Collision. Hope I don't get banned. Go cry me a river. Real glass, Eminem. Make sure the glass you break is real. Enjoy the shows. Enjoy the show. So they're doing both shows on Wednesday. Well, I guess they got the pay-per-view on Sunday. That's right, we got Revolution coming up on Sunday. Sting's final match. Sting is going to make his final... And it may not end up being his final, but his final Dynamite appearance on Wednesday. You know, it's starting to set in as I think about it. I'm getting actually very sad. I mean, he is 64, so I mean, it's time, but I'm getting sad the more I think about that this is going to be it for Sting. You know, I like Sting. Even though I grew up a WWF guy, you know, when I would watch the other shows, Sting was always one of my favorites. And, you know, the longevity he's had in his career and had a lot of great matches. In fact, what I think I'm going to do on the podcast on Sunday in celebration of Sting's final match is a top 10 best Sting matches countdown. We're going to be doing another countdown. I'm going to rank what I think are the top 10 matches of Sting's career. In tribute to him and in celebration of his retirement, I think we'll do that on episode 851 this Sunday. But yeah, I'm getting sad. Feels like the end of an era. Base Beerus, your picks for Four Horsemen today from the AEW roster. Oh, God. I don't know. I mean, MJF would be one. He'd be like the Flair of the Horsemen. That's an easy one. They kind of already had their own Horsemen, honestly. That's really what the Pinnacle was. The Pinnacle was like their modern-day version of the Horsemen. You had MJF. You had Wardlow. He was like the enforcer, right? The Arn Anderson of the group. You had FTR. Which I guess you could say FTR is more like Arn and Tully. But honestly, like, it would be MJF, it would be FTR. And then really, you could plug almost anybody in that fourth spot. I'm trying to think who I would put in the fourth spot. But that's really what the Pinnacle was. They already had their own Four Horsemen. Drew says, I hope Luger shows up for Sting's final match. I think he'll be there. Lex has a podcast now, and on his podcast, he was asked about that, and he said, without giving an answer, he said that, do you really think I would not be there to support the man who was there for me at 3 o'clock in the morning after I had my motorcycle wreck and helped save my arm when the doctors wanted to amputate my arm. He said, I'm not going to say that I'm going to be there, but I'm also not going to tell you that I'm not going to be there. So I have a feeling that Lex Luger is going to be there, and he should be there. His career in many ways is intertwined with Sting. He should be there. Ric Flair will be there. I hope that Tony Khan can round up maybe a few more people. Maybe Nikita. Maybe Nikita Koloff will be there. Find different people from Sting's past, and I would love to see them there in the front row, lined up, you know, to watch his final match. I think that would be very cool. What do I think is the biggest what-if match that never happened? There have been a lot of what-if matches that never happened. Rock and Shawn, Undertaker and Sting, Bret Hart and Kurt Angle. Bret Hart and Kurt Angle would be my personal one. You know, everyone's going to have a different answer for that. Undertaker and Andre. You know, Undertaker has said he wishes he would have been able to work Andre. Didn't work out. Nash will not be there. Nash will not be there. Not necessarily because WWE told him he can't be there, but he just has a loyalty and a fealty to Triple H. You know, I mean, he said his concern is that he shows up, they show him on camera, and on screen on the bottom they put his name and they say Kevin Nash is All Elite, which they would never do that. So I think it's just an excuse where he feels like, you know, he has a loyalty to Triple H and WWE, and he doesn't want to betray that. So I don't think WWE said, no, you're not allowed. I think it's more out of respect and deference to Triple H. He just feels like he doesn't want to be there. Honestly, I think part of it also is he probably just doesn't want to be there. You know, I mean, he still does Comic Cons and stuff since his son passed away. But you have not seen Kevin Nash, like, on television or any kind of event like that. I don't think he wants to be around people who are going to be, you know, either asking questions or saying stuff about his son or whatever. And, you know, it's tough. And I get that. You know, I understand it. And he jokes about how, like, he likes being a hermit and all this stuff. I just think he really just doesn't want to be around people. Which is totally understandable, if that's how he feels. God of Seduction, Sting is the Scorpion King. Yes, he is. All right, Wednesday night is AEW Dynamite, the final Dynamite before Revolution. And probably talk Revolution predictions on that stream as well. We'll recap the show, we'll talk Revolution. Again, this will be Sting's final Dynamite appearance for now. Tony Khan has said he'll probably make the occasional appearance here and there in the future. He'll probably be on something of like a Legends deal with them. I would imagine he'll still be under contract with them. And if they ever do another video game, he'll be in the video game. And yeah, I mean, that's why they signed. Look, when they signed Sting in the first place, I said it's a brilliant move because all the merchandising and marketing opportunities with this guy. I don't think Tony Khan wants to give that up. But for all intents and purposes, this is really his last appearance, his last promo on TV. We'll get to hear from him. And he just lost his father last week. So it's going to be a very emotional weekend coming up. Friday night, The Rock back on SmackDown. Sala Monster back here on YouTube with you. And then we got the House of Glory show here in New York on Saturday. I'll be there. Episode 851 on Sunday, and then the Revolution stream Sunday night. So I got the Hog Show on Saturday and two podcasts, basically, on Sunday. The work never ends. So I hope you guys will join me for all of it. Until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you for all the love and support tonight. Hit that like button, please, on your way out. I sure would appreciate it. And come on back here on Wednesday night for the Dynamite stream. Until then, take care, guys.